I always felt it was disingenuous considering that as schools, we try to model becoming lifelong learners, but yet we're afraid to let students know we don't know something. And I think that speaks a little bit to this idea of what we talked about before, being the keeper of the knowledge.
Connection, engagement, rigor, success. Here on Coaching You Through All Things Education podcast, we are building a legacy of success together, one episode at a time, each Tuesday at noon. As your host, Anne Labangana Clay of ANC Unlimited, we will unpack relevant topics in education together. And when I'm not podcasting, coaching, or consulting, stop by our website, acunlimited.org, for our new blog, Coaching You EDU, and a menu of services. If something resonates with you during this episode, message me on the podcast app of your choice or leave a comment on LinkedIn, our company Facebook page, or on Twitter. Our guests appreciate your feedback. Check out the story notes for our social media details, and certainly, if you have an episode suggestion, send it to coachingallthingsedu@gmail.com. Now let's dive in.
Hello, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 32 of Coaching You Through All Things Education podcast. We are ecstatic today for two reasons. We are kicking off a new series called PD in Your Pocket, where we unpack key do's and don'ts from the #100Stop series in 30 minutes or less. And more importantly, we have the honor of having with us today our first guest in this new series, Jesse Lubinsky.
It's my honor.
Oh, well, thank you.
Jesse is a chief learning officer for Ready Learner One in Westchester, New York, an educator, an international keynote speaker. He is author of Reality Bites and Esports Playbook. He is also a collaborative author for Chapter 98 in the #100Stop series book, 100 No-Nonsense Things That All Teachers Should Stop Doing, as well as a fellow podcaster of the Partial Credit podcast. Welcome, Jesse.
I try to keep busy.
Oh, indeed. You're busier than I am. I love that. Well, that's good for the brain and for the soul, right?
All totally.
Love.
It's really great to be here. It's exciting. And, you know, it's great to meet other authors who've been part of the 100 Stop Series project. I think it's been such an interesting... It's been interesting to see the response to the work and to kind of hear what people have been connecting with and what's resonated with them regarding some of the different chapters. So it's been really exciting.
Absolutely. It's been amazing, you know. So we're going to get started here. First of all, I want to congratulate you on your most recent win of making the EdTech Magazine 2021 Dean's List of 30 Higher Ed IT Influencers Worthy Follow. That's a mouthful.
Thank you very much. I happened to be working with one of my co-founders for Ready Learner One that day, and we got an email in from on the informational email line, and it mentioned it, and I was like, that's got to be spam. But it turned out it wasn't. It was real. I was excited.
Well, I'm excited to continue to follow you and see what's coming up next for you. All right. Can you tell us a little bit more about you
and sure.
the work that you do with Ready Learner One, including your upcoming free conference for educators from July 14th through the 28th?
Yes, I'd love to. So I'm going to try to do the quick bio version. So I was a career changer early on in my career. I started off as a technology consultant for Fortune 500 companies, was a career changer, and actually joined the New York City Teaching Fellows Program, which is kind of like Teach for America, but based out of New York City. I taught in the Bronx for a few years. You know, they don't send you to learn how to be a teacher. They just throw you in the classroom on day one, and then you kind of go to take your ed classes while you're doing it. So it was really trial by fire. And made my way through. I was a teacher for a little under a decade, and then I spent another decade plus as an administrator and was a director of technology and innovation. And then a few years ago, started a company called Ready Learner One with a couple of other educators. And we were really focused on emerging technologies, things like AR and VR. You mentioned we wrote Reality Bites and esports. We wrote the esports education playbook. But of course, the pandemic hit, and then, you know, best laid plans and all that. So we started to work with the schools we were working with and figure out how can we help support them in this time of need. And that kind of led us to form Changemaker, which is a subsidiary company of Ready Learner One, where we really do all of our K-12 work. And you mentioned our conference. We are actually running a free two-week conference starting on July 14th. You mentioned this. It's completely asynchronous. The sessions will be pre-recorded. There's 60-plus sessions. But what I'm really excited about is the quality of speakers and content that we have so far. So the keynote speaker for the event is Juliana Ortube, who won the 2021 National Teacher of the Year Award. We also have 20 state teachers of the year who've won Teacher of the Year Awards in 2021, as well as a bunch of really well-renowned speakers and authors who've agreed to participate in this conference. There'll be opportunities for micro-credentialing, you know, digital badges, certificates of completion, giveaways of books, interactive whiteboards. And all of it is really to kind of highlight the work we're doing at Changemaker and the platform, the learning platform that we have for schools as we look to reinvent how professional development is done. Because, you know, I think as we start to return to whatever the new normal is going to be, I don't think PD is going to be quite the way it was. So I think districts always invested a lot of dollars to bring, you know, high quality educators into their schools. And now I think there's a question of, well, we want to return to normal in the classroom, but does PD have to also be in person? And I think we're going to start to see a mix of that. And so we tried to adapt to that new model.
Sure. Wow. I mean, first of all, you have to tell us how we can register.
Was just about to. I was like, I forgot to see the link.
Sorry, I got so excited.
Yeah, no, the link to for more information, to see our list of speakers, to see our sessions and register is bit.ly/21changemaker, all lowercase, and that will take you right to our registration page. If you get the bit.ly wrong, just go to changemakeredu.org and you'll see a conference link right there. Even if you're hearing this after July 14th, please, if it's not the 28th yet, register. It's open for 2 weeks, so it's all available for anyone. First, you know, come enjoy. We're going to be sending out lots of promotions to our attendees for giveaways and stuff like that. We're just really excited to be able to give back and make this available to educators who I know really need that support, especially coming off of what's been a really tough year. And I guess one thing I would just add about the conference is I'm an ed tech guy by trade. I admit that. I love my technology stuff. This is not an ed tech conference. This will have some technology sessions, but it is really about, you know, what it means. The theme for the conference is celebrating teacher innovation, compassion, and resilience during unprecedented times. So we are really looking to promote SEL, talk about adult wellness. How do we take care of ourselves and our students? You know, what are some of the things we need to do in order to make equitable classrooms? You know, how do we support LGBTQ plus students? Like all of these different challenges that we've had, we bring in experts who know and let them talk about what we can do to provide support. We also have leadership sessions. I mean, we really went and tried to find the best people to provide the best content.
That is amazing and awesome and everything.
Right? And free.
And free.
It's my favorite part.
Register today, everybody.
Right.
No, but seriously, you made some excellent points. PD, PLCs, anything really is not, even in the classroom, right? We're not going to let go of those tech pieces, right? Why can't we embrace them and utilize them, you know, effectively? And I think that's the piece that teachers are going to glean from your conferences. You know, I might know how to use this platform, or I might not know how to use that a bit, you know what I mean? But how can I use it so that it's truly effective and just flawless, or you know, seamless, there we go, seamless, you know, when I'm teaching, right? It's not like this chunky, you know.
I feel like we could have a whole separate conversation about just technology itself in the pandemic, but I think my biggest takeaway, and I know I'm supposed to save my takeaways for later, but I'll just talk about one now, which is coming into the pandemic, we had a lot of educators who did not feel comfortable using technology at all. And out of necessity, they had to rise to the occasion and use technology. And so now what I'm wondering is, so we're coming out of this, we're looking at how we reimagine education. What are we going to do with the fact that all of our teachers have a greater capacity now for using technology? I don't think we have to rely on it, but I think we could use it in a much more meaningful way than it's been used in the past. So that's really the hope. But I also know that we've been given this gift in a sense of being able to take a step back and say, what are the things that have worked and what are the things that have not worked? And let's say, for instance, students who really thrived during remote learning, of which there were some, why? Why? What was the disconnect in what they were experiencing in the school buildings? And how do we now take some of what we've kind of learned from this whole pandemic process and apply it to those students so that every student has a chance to be successful within our schools?
Oh, indeed. And then that leads to the second point that I took away from what you were saying is, you know, it's not just the academic components, it's the SEL, the social emotional, you know, the whole child, right? That's my big thing. So you're addressing the whole child. When you go into that classroom, that technology better, you know, address every part of the child, not just the academic component.
I mentioned we wrote the esports education playbook, and the whole first section of that book is about SEL, because I don't think people even make that connection to something like video games. How could that be an SEL benefit? And to be honest, I haven't found many things besides esports that provide the same level of SEL benefits for schools in quite the same way. So I think one thing we have, I guess, realized as a result, we probably knew it in our heads before, but now it's been put front and center, is we need to be putting SEL right on top of everything, because students during the pandemic needed to check in with them daily to make sure, you know, what are you feeling? What can we do to support you? And that's ultimately what our jobs are as educators. It's not to help them regurgitate facts and information. It's to help them grow as people and become lifelong learners. So the only way we can do that is by making sure their SEL needs are met. And I'm glad that this has been such a huge push in the education space.
Absolutely.
To put that forward. And, you know, a lot of us went through teacher prep programs where that was not something we were told how to do, to how to support those social emotional needs in quite the right ways. So I think we're all learning together. And I think the nice part is, even if we're kind of learning as we go, that's exactly right. We're learning, we're modeling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You made an excellent point that, you know, this pandemic has unearthed a lot of things, you know, a lot of needs, and say it like that.
Right.
And one of those is to completely embed that SEL in everything that we do, not in isolation, not in silos, in everything, just embed it.
100%.
And I love that. I'm going to be reading a little bit more about your book now. No, seriously, because a video game, I understand it from some perspective, but I would like to read further and understand it, like you said, from the SEL perspective. Like, how is it beneficial?
The quick 2-second kind of overview is just, for those of you who don't even know what esports are when I'm talking about it, esports are competitive video gaming.
Yes.
And what we found is, and if you don't know much about esports, if you just do a couple of Google searches, you'll see that it's even more popular than football. If globally, the League of Legends championships had more viewers than the Super Bowl. So it is right. People are shocked when they hear that, but the numbers bear out that this is kind of where kids are, right? Every kid, every adult plays games in some form. So the big takeaway is, how do we meet kids where they are? right? If kids find that school is a place where they can pursue the things that they love and they're passionate about, and we're not telling them that's wrong, but we're embracing it and finding ways to align it with the things we need them to know, we find that the results are way more impactful, and that, you know, as educators, we're always looking to kind of, you know, bottom line, how do we measure success? Yes. Well, we can actually point to statistics that show that students who are participating in these type of programs are more successful at pretty much every level. And that includes earning scholarships, you know, the new career preparedness, that the, our old CTE, you know, the career and technical education, it addresses those needs as well. So we talk about preparing kids for the jobs of tomorrow, but it's right in front of us. And a lot of us just kind of pish-posh it. And what I would say is, if you know nothing about video games, that's fine. You don't have to know anything about it in order to support students in doing something they love. You just have to ultimately be an advisor and a support system for them.
Indeed. Wow. Okay. It's that simple. I love it. I love it. I love it. All right. Well, we are going to move on to our next topic here. Although, like you said, we could talk all day, actually, about what...
I'm a gabber. Like you said, I'm a podcaster. And when you're a podcaster, you know, you get used to talking a lot very quickly. So
right.
Time gets away from you, right?
It's all good. All right. So let's unpack your chapter in 100 no-nonsense things that all teachers should stop doing, right? You wrote chapter 98, feeling stupid if you don't know something.
Right.
So first of all, that title, right, is great. Tell us a brief summary of your chapter and why you felt passionate to write it.
So for those of you, and this, it's good that I'm kind of kicking this off because I can lay some groundwork. For those of you who are going to be hearing from all these amazing authors who've written these chapters, just so you know how we kind of got connected with our chapters, there was this laundry list of topics. We all were passionate to write. We took a look at the topics and, you know, ultimately chose to write about the one that resonated with us. And that one resonated with me because I attended New York City public schools. You know, taught in New York City public schools. And I always remember hearing from veteran teachers, and even in my own experience, that sometimes you would catch a teacher doing something wrong, but they would never own it, right? And I always felt it was disingenuous, considering that as schools, we try to model becoming lifelong learners, but yet we're afraid to let students know we don't know something. And I think that speaks a little bit to this idea of what we talked about before, being the keeper of the knowledge, right? Like, as a teacher, what is my job? Is my job to build lifelong learners, or is my job to make sure you've memorized all 50 states or that you know facts?
Go ahead.
So the truth is, ultimately, we're supposed to model lifelong learning, and part of learning is failure. And so I think it is totally, when I was a math teacher, there were plenty of times where I got caught where the student would ask me something or correct me, and you know what? I was busted. I didn't know it. And ultimately, I would have to say, you know what? I don't know. I'm going to look that up, and I'll let you know what I find out.
Absolutely.
But the fear of letting students know you don't know something sometimes holds us back. And it's honestly, it's really poor modeling.
Absolutely.
So I think we do a terrible disservice to our students when we let them, when we make them think that we are the keeper of the gatekeeper of all the knowledge. And I share a story in the book about one time I went to see, I was invited to a neighboring district to see a famous EdTech speaker talk to the entire district of teachers. And he had held up his phone and said, you know, if all you have to offer my kids is something they could look up on this, then we don't need you. And I remember they were appalled.
Oh.
But I also remember thinking, he's kind of right. Like, right. Like, ultimately, we don't need to be the knowledge gatekeepers anymore, because knowledge is free and available and readily accessible within seconds, to the point where when my kids ask me something, I'm annoyed when they don't Google it first. It's like, couldn't you just look that up? Like, why are you asking me? So ultimately, if knowledge isn't the thing that we offer, what do we offer as educators? And I think that's the piece where what we offer is the ability to become problem solvers, right? We offer the ability to gather all that dispositional thinking and those different learning modalities that we need them to know in order to be successful in whatever they pursue. We may not know what the jobs of tomorrow are, but we do know what the skills that are going to be the underlying skills that are necessary. And we always talk, I mean, it's become very cliche in education to talk about failing forward and, you know, failure is the best learning opportunity. Well, then why don't we model that?
Exactly. Let's keep it, we have quotes, but we don't actually.
Right. It's do as I say, not as I do.
Thank you.
I always get that one wrong, by the way. I'm very proud of myself for actually nailing that one. But it's the first time I think I've gotten it right.
I get it. Because I was tongue twisted on that one. Yeah. It's the truth, though. You know,
yeah.
Modeling it. I mean, we all know that that's the whole role of a leader, right? Is we have to model both. We have to model the good and we have to model what we fail at as well, or how we handle what we fail.
There's been this long, like, I feel like in education, we talked for a long time about what the role of teachers is will be like in the 21st century, and, you know, whether we are sage on a stage or whether we're kind of facilitating learning. Mm-hmm. And I think it's hard to ignore. We don't need the old lecture style education anymore. We need learning to be more hands-on and experiential. Sure. We need to actually model that not only is failure a good, you know, part of the process, but it's almost expected. And part of reflecting on that is how we are going to measure success, right? How do we bounce back? How do we actually show grit and determination? Grit, another big educational word, right? How do we teach grit?
Yes.
Well, we teach grit by not punishing failure, but ultimately, you know, measuring what we're learning from it. And so I think that's why looking at that title, that really, of the chapters when I was going through the list, that was the one that just popped out at me, that I was like, wow, I feel really strongly about this one. So, and what's nice about the book is that I feel like we found 100+ people who found that thing that really resonates with them, and they were all able to share their story and their thinking. And, you know, I mean, look, I'd be lying if I said I agree with all 100 things that are in the book. But what I do love is that there are 100 educators that passionate about their positions for me to actually be able to sit and listen, hear them out and say, you know what? I totally get where you're coming from. That may not fit me in particular. Yeah,
absolutely.
But I think the big message behind the book and the big message behind the next one for school leaders is ultimately, you know, we have to be passionate and engaged about this profession. Because the worst thing we can do is let education become this static place where kind of the social norms are not questioned and we don't push back at all on the traditional thinking just because that's the way it's always been. And so whether you agree or not, and whether you feel like the title is too in your face, I hope people do understand that it all comes from a good place, and it all comes from a place of everyone wanting to make sure that, you know, schools are better in the end.
Yes, yes. That's the goal, you know, and I like what you're saying. You know, we can't keep closed mouth about some of these things that we see. We see, you know, this book, right? These 100 chapters and the foreword and all are things we've all experienced. They're not, you know, it's not made up. Unfortunately, there are teachers that, you know, and educators that are doing these things, and it's harming, you know, our students. And so thank you so much for sharing about chapter 98. I hope everybody will flip right to
I hope everyone made it all the way back to chapter 98. I'm all the way tucked in the back. I'm by John Crippo, who I love, though. So it's like, I feel like, oh, I'm in the back with John Crippo. That's cool. Hopefully they'll skip over me to get to him, but that's okay.
No, I'm sure they have. Wonderful. All right. Well, you gave us one of your takeaways already. You can repeat it if you want, but please give our listening audience at least 3 takeaways that you can share with them about how they should go into this next school year.
I think the first takeaway, and this kind of builds on what I said before, is, you know, we want to make sure we're keeping our minds open, and that we're not, and this is really what we were just talking about with the chapter, is not just about being afraid to fail, but just being afraid of change. Change was thrust upon us. We have no choice now. We are in change.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of us as educators, we know we have struggles with the system, with how it is. I mean, we can go on, we can forget about one podcast. We could do a whole podcast series just if we wanted to just complain about the things that are wrong. But the truth is, if that's all we're doing is complaining, then nothing will ever change and nothing will improve. And not just for yourself, but for your children, for your students, for everyone. So we have to kind of be the change. I know that sounds so cliche, but if we're not part of the change, then there may not be change. that was my first one. Along the lines with the feeling stupid, it's don't be afraid. You want to be open-minded, but also don't be afraid to take that leap. Because fear ultimately is what's holding us back. And I think the feeling stupid, a lot of the reasons why sometimes teachers will not admit to something wrong is the fear of what that means. But what does it mean? You don't know something? None of us are super, are perfect, right? It's okay to say when you don't know something. My third takeaway would be make sure you have a balanced diet that includes vegetables and healthy eating. I'm going to follow that one myself. I don't know. I just totally got lost for a second. I was like, wait, what's, okay. I'll give you a real one. Another takeaway, building on top of that idea of being afraid.
Yes.
Try something new, put yourself out there. So that's another thing is, it's one thing to stop being afraid, but it's another thing to actually and be open to change. Mm-hmm. But then take that third step, which is putting yourself out there to put yourself in a position of doing something that is a little bit out of your comfort zone, but just stretches you just a little bit. The esports thing that we were talking about a few minutes ago, I think is a perfect example of something where someone who knows nothing about video games, but is passionate about helping kids might say, you know what? I'm going to do this, even though I know nothing about it, because I know it's going to benefit kids.
Yeah.
So that might be a good starting point. So the esports education playbook is a perfect place to read all about esports and find out what you could do to start a club or program in your school.
Woo-hoo!
There you go.
That wasn't a plug, was it?
No, not at all. I would never do such a thing.
Oh, those were some great takeaways. And they actually built upon one another. Like you said, even I'm going to take the last one. Try something new, even if it's not something that you're comfortable with, right? Or you think you're going to be bored with, which I know you won't be with esports. But anyway, you should try it. And especially if it's going to benefit kids, and everything
right.
actually benefits kids. If you think about it, people that are out on vacations out in the West, out in Grand Canyon, et cetera, they are going to bring those pictures back and, show them to their students. That's building background knowledge. So minor, right? But huge.
Huge.
So bring you into the classroom, try something new and, bring it into the classroom. Either way, students are going to benefit and your mind will be open and you will be taking risks all at the same time.
It's so easy to be safe and comfortable. It really is. And I'm speaking from personal experience. And actually, I mean, maybe I'll save this for our last question. I realize I had a segue thought. I'll wait for a second.
All right, it's coming. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay,
because I've had 30 minutes to think about this, so I'm ready.
All right, here we go. This question is trending on the show. If you could have a billboard with anything on it, what legacy message would you print on it and why?
So you asked me this right before we went on the air, and my mouth was running the whole time, but as soon as you said that, I just stopped because I'm like, wow, this is really deep. And now I have to actually think about this.
Aww.
But the first thing that popped into my head was a movie quote. And although I hate to I wish I had my own inspirational quote to give you, that could be put on a meme or something. The truth is I can't get this quote out of my head.
Sure.
And so I'm going to say that, I made the transition. Fear has held me back a lot of times in my life where I have not, I've been afraid in my 20s, I was afraid to leave a job I didn't like because to go to a startup because I was afraid of the lack of security. Even later in my career, I let myself be in positions where I was unhappy and I was just too afraid of what's going to happen if, but never focused on the positive of what could happen if it works out. The downside always bring me back. And so the quote that I kept thinking of was, I don't know if you're going to remember the quote from Shawshank Redemption.
Okay.
Towards the end of the movie when he says, get busy living or get busy dying.
All right, man.
And that's it helps that it's Morgan Freeman's voice that I'm hearing in my head, because if Morgan Freeman is narrating your life, chances are that things are good, right? But I mean, that's the quote I keep thinking of, because the truth is, when you let fear dictate a lot of the things that you're doing, whether it's in your professional career, whether it's in your life, you're not living, and maybe you're not dying, but you're not fulfilling your potential.
I see.
And so, you know, I'm definitely on a scarier path than I was a few years ago, where I definitely had more security and in that sense. And I had almost like I could see the next 20 years mapped out for me. And now I can't even see the next 5 months mapped out for me. But you know what?
Sure.
It's scary, but it's exciting, but there's potential. And I feel like I'm actually heading toward fulfilling what I should be doing, if that makes sense. And I hope that every educator out there is able to find that point, especially coming out of such a crazy time.
Yes. Oh, that is awesome, Jesse. You know, because what I'm hearing you say is you're living, you feel like you're alive more so now than you did.
In a lot of ways. Yeah.
In a lot of ways. You know, than 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
If you're going through the motions. You know,
sure, absolutely. And I think a lot of people can resonate with that, you know.
The one thing I would add is I think people don't realize that even in their current positions, it doesn't require you to leave your job to reinvent yourself or to find that passion or do that thing that's really going to fill your cup. You can do that in without having to upheave your whole life. There are ways of doing that. So don't feel like what I'm saying is you need to just drop everything and go move something. Like, no. But I think what we talked about before, those three takeaways, you know, being open, putting yourself out there and letting go of that fear, that's going to help put you on the right path. And, you know, when that right thing comes along, you'll know what it is, you'll seize it. And hopefully that'll put you in a much better place, you know, and make you happier and ultimately make you a better educator.
Well, that concludes another episode of Coaching You Through All Things Education. As Confucius states, those people who develop the ability to continuously acquire new and better forms of knowledge that they can apply to their work and into their lives will be the movers and shakers in our society for the indefinite future. Again, you can find me on LinkedIn and Twitter, or you can also find us on our Facebook page, ANC Unlimited. As a reminder, for a free consultation in any area of education that you choose, for educators, administrators, or parents, please visit acunlimited.org. Until next time, stay stress-free and be well.